This is episode 62 of the Renew the Arts podcast, Narcissism and the Gifted Artist. Welcome to the Renew the Arts podcast, where we discuss the role of art and creativity in the church and in the world. I'm your host, Michael Minkoff. Our motto at Renew the Arts is liberate Christian creativity, and we're doing this through cultivating Christian communities and in through the arts by inspiring art patronage and supporting artists. If you'd like to join our community of monthly donors and contribute to this podcast, please visit renewthearts.org/donate. If you want to join the Porchlight Network and begin your journey into patronage, go to app.porchlight.art and sign up as a host or a tender. Welcome back to the Renew the Arts podcast. It's Michael here again. We're going to have another episode where it's just me talking. And I have a little bit of housekeeping to do right off the bat. The first is that our next episode is going to be a mailbag episode, which means that I'd love to get some questions from you all. These questions could be about any of the topics we've talked about in the last year, but they also could be general questions having to do with aesthetics or anything that connects to aesthetics or art and faith. So send in your questions. You can comment on our website here on this podcast particularly, or you can just send us a question in any of the ways that you can get in contact with us on our website or otherwise. Or if you know me personally, obviously you could just send me a text or send Katie a text or any of these kinds of things. So if you're a listener and you have some burning questions that you want to be discussed here on the podcast, make sure that you send in your questions now. Next episode is going to be a mailbag, and I'm really hoping I've got some good questions to go over and talk about, because if I don't really know what I'm going to do for the last episode of this season. So please help me out, do what you can, and get engaged. Thank you. So, confession time. I don't really love most podcasts. I don't enjoy listening to freeform conversations. I don't like how unfocused they can be. And I tend to enjoy podcasts, if I do enjoy them at all, that are a lot closer to audiobooks and being well-prepared material. And so there's a few podcasts that I really like. And one of those podcasts is the Martyr Made podcast by Daryl Cooper. And my favorite episode from him is an episode called The Underground Spirit that I'll link to in the show notes. But it is on the historical and philosophical relationship between Nietzsche and Dostoevsky. And in this podcast, Daryl makes a lot of the relationship between Nietzsche and Dostoevsky. They apparently didn't know each other personally, but Nietzsche found out about Dostoevsky later on and viewed Dostoevsky as a sort of mirror twin of his philosophy. But it's sort of a dark mirror twin, because Nietzsche seems to go one direction with the philosophy, and Dostoevsky seems to go an entirely other direction, in that Nietzsche ultimately embraces existentialism, nihilism, and the impulse to power, whereas Dostoevsky, as a Christian, submits himself ultimately to God and views narcissism, a will to power, and nihilism and existentialism as ultimately being the wrong way to go. But they both have a lot of similarities in their personalities that Daryl Cooper makes a lot of. And particularly, he talks about their impulse toward narcissism. He makes a good argument, I think, in both of their cases. But also, he offhandedly, during the episode, talks about how a lot of artists, and especially, quote-unquote, the greats, have this issue of narcissism that seems to pervade all of their work and a lot of their struggles. And so I was interested in this conversation, and it really brought to mind this idea of, well, is it generally the case that the gifted artist has to struggle concerning narcissism? And if so, why would that be the case? And what might that artist be able to do in order to fight against that? First, we need to talk about what exactly is meant by narcissism here. And then we can talk about whether or not that applies to artists generally, or great artists, you know, quote unquote. And then to talk a little bit about what might be able to be done about this. If you're a host or a patron, this might give you a little bit of an inside picture of some of the struggles that a lot of artists actually deal with. So first off, let's talk about what is narcissism. Narcissism usually involves three main qualities of personality. One is grandiosity, The other is a need for admiration, and the other is often a lack of empathy for what other people are feeling or going through. And I think the one that Daryl Cooper applies most specifically throughout his podcast is this idea of grandiosity, this sense of superiority that you feel concerning the people around you. And sometimes that sense of superiority could be fantastical, meaning it's only in your mind and no one else would agree with it. Or it also could be a sense of superiority in behavior. I'm better than the rules. I don't have to follow the rules. Those are for the plebeians. Those are for the unwashed masses. I am a special person, and therefore the rules do not apply to me. And I think I would like to focus on that because I think that that is connected to the need for admiration, which could just be a need for understanding. You wish that other people saw you as being as important as you see yourself. And so you have a need to try to get that out of other people some way or another. And that also can lead to a lack of empathy in the sense of you feel like you're experiencing things very differently than the people around you are experiencing them. So is that actually the case in the case of Nietzsche and Dostoevsky? Let's look at that. So the problem that I had that I immediately started thinking about, even while I was listening to the podcast, The Underground Spirit, was could you really call Nietzsche and Dostoevsky grandiose if they consider themselves superior in some sense or different or quote unquote better than the people around them? And they also have this struggle against the views that other people have of them. When looking at it through the lens of history, I mean, we're talking about Nietzsche. We're talking about Dostoevsky. We read their work. We consider them to be extremely important contributors to their particular arenas. Nietzsche is considered a great philosopher. Dostoevsky, a great artist, a great novelist. So when you're looking at that, you're saying, well, they considered themselves great. Well, history has confirmed that, in fact, they were great. So if in their particular environments, their communities didn't consider them great, their communities didn't recognize their superiority, in some sense, you could say they were right and their communities were wrong. And you see this all the time with people who do great things or achieve some kind of timeless contribution to humanity in their particular arena. Oftentimes, their community, their families, etc., don't really look at them as being as important as they look at themselves, but oftentimes their communities are actually wrong. They're not just overwhelmed with this grandiosity that's based in fantasy that has no legitimate foundation in reality, but in fact, they are correct about the importance of what they're doing or what they're saying, and the people around them, in some ways, are incorrect, inaccurate. So how could that be called narcissism if, in fact, it is accurate? And that was something I really struggled with in terms of Nietzsche and Dostoevsky. And you can broaden that out and say, well, is that an issue with artists more commonly? Well, I think that it is an issue with a lot of artists, and it's for similar reasons, that they see things differently than the people around them, they feel things differently than the people around them, and that makes them feel alone. And in some ways, that aloneness, that outcastness, that stranger quality makes them also feel special, unique in their community. They see things and feel things that other people don't, and they feel special because of that. And they wish other people recognized the importance of what it is that they're doing and the importance of that particular way of seeing in the community. Because oftentimes, that way of seeing or feeling or thinking is actually applying itself in some necessary way to a problem in the particular community, which explains why the community would reject it, but it also explains why the person would feel it's very, very important because they're seeing this, they think it could make the world better, they think that it could change the way people are operating, and they think it would be helpful if that happened. And so I do think it is the case that a lot of artists tend to struggle with this idea of narcissism, with this idea of their own sense of superiority and a need for admiration or understanding that comes along with that, and a separate feeling, a lack of empathy that comes from, I don't feel what other people feel, I don't think what other people think. So an artist oftentimes is going to struggle with this. And how is an artist supposed to deal with this? How is an artist supposed to compensate and function properly, especially if he's right? By this, I mean, especially if history is going to come back later and confirm Yes, in fact, this person wasn't suffering from delusions of grandeur, but in fact, they were actually saying important, helpful, right, accurate, insightful things that should have been listened to or should have been taken into account. How does an artist deal with that if that's the feeling they have? First off, you would want to say some artists have a delusion of grandeur, that some people have a delusion of grandeur. Some people actually pursue art and the vagaries of aesthetic distinction because they can claim to be great when in fact they aren't really great or aren't doing anything that's really great. I mean, we've all seen this. We've all seen those people who want to feel special. And so they put on airs and look the part of the artist and pretend to be doing things that nobody else could possibly understand. And even Nietzsche said, you know, that a lot of the poets muddy their waters to appear deep. So he recognized that there were a lot of people who pretended to be deep, who in fact were just muddy, and they had to maintain that muddiness in order to maintain their sense of superiority or their sense of specialness, even though they didn't really have one legitimately to fall back on. So the first thing that a person would need to do is say, well, it's possible that the community that I'm in that doesn't recognize my quote-unquote greatness doesn't recognize it because it's not there. That is a possible truth. That is a possible reality. It might be that I am suffering from delusions of grandeur. And how would you go about determining that? Well, we'll get to that later. Because I think that the key to determining that and understanding that, and the key to actually functioning in your society properly, even if you are given great gifts, is in many ways the same. To humble yourself to the service and the love of your community and the people that are around you, to humble yourself before God, to recognize your actual place. And so I'm going to try and give you some tools to do that. If you're an artist who's struggling with narcissism, these things might be helpful. Full disclosure, I have myself struggled with narcissism, so I'm not preaching to everyone else and not receiving these things myself. These are things I've had to struggle with and overcome as well. Let's get into it a little bit. Let's talk about how a person might be able to deal with these great gifts. The first thing you need to understand is it is a gift. It is called a gift because it is a gift, meaning it is something that is given to you. There's a couple of aspects of this that are important. The first is, as a gift, it does not come from you. It is not truly you. It is not truly yours. Let me give you an analogy. If you have two soldiers, and both soldiers are fully committed to the cause of their particular ruler, their particular leader, and they're going to try to do everything they can to forward the will of their particular leader, okay? So let's say you got a king, and the king has a certain amount of equipment that he's going to distribute to his soldiers. And he's got two soldiers, they're both committed, they're both loyal. To one of the soldiers, he gives the state-of-the-art technology, right? Let's say he puts that guy in a mech warrior suit with laser-guided missiles and submachine guns and all sorts of things, and it's impenetrable, it's made of adamantium or whatever, and this guy is going to go out there and he's going to be able to be the best soldier of all time using this powerful suit that he's been granted. And then to the next guy, the other soldier, just as loyal, just as good, the king decides that he's going to give him a wooden staff and a leather tunic. And he says, now you go out and you accomplish my will. He tells this to both of them, both of you, go out and accomplish my will. Now, it's clear that in terms of the outcomes that are involved, that the person in the mech warrior suit is probably going to be a more effective soldier than the person in the leather tunic with a staff. But you can't say that one soldier is actually better than the other soldier. In fact, the soldier with the wooden staff might be a better soldier. He might be more loyal. He might be more dedicated. He might be more creative. He might have to go through a greater deal of training and discipline in order to be able to accomplish what he can accomplish with lesser equipment. And in many ways, you might say that over time even, the person given the mech warrior suit might end up being the worst soldier on his own terms, meaning if you strip both of them of the equipment they've been given, which one's probably going to end up being the better soldier on his own terms? And actually, the person with the wooden staff has a much better chance of being the better soldier on his own terms. So if you're talking about gifts, this is really the equipment that you have been given by God, and these are God's gifts, meaning this is the strength that God has granted to you in these particular areas to accomplish his will. The problem with narcissism is that you begin to view the gift as being you, that you are the gift and the gift is you. And that is not the case. Even in the Nietzsche-Dostoevsky story, you can see that that's not the case. If you strip Nietzsche of his extraordinary insight and his capacity for understanding, then what is Nietzsche? Well, we actually get to see that in history because Nietzsche was completely out of his mind for the last 10 years of his life. When he had fully given over to the idea that he was God, and he signed all of the letters that he wrote in these last 10 crazy years with either Dionysus or the crucified, and he was very adamant that he was in fact a god and should be treated as a god, and yet everyone recognized this man has lost his mind entirely. He is going around, you know, like Nebuchadnezzar in the wilderness, just a madman. He is a crazy person. He has become crazy. And so in a sense, you're like, that is Nietzsche on his own terms. That is Nietzsche stripped of the mech warrior suit. And Nietzsche on his own terms is not much. He's a crazy person. He is not a probing and insightful and understanding visionary. Instead, he's become a raving lunatic. And so with Dostoevsky, these gifts that he had, he viewed them as a burden and as a stewardship that he needed to use for the sake of God's kingdom. And he did use them for the sake of God's kingdom over time. And even this story that's told at the end of Dostoevsky's life, you can see the degree of meekness and humility that has pervaded his understanding of himself. When in his last moments, when he brings his children into his room, and he's communicated with his handlers or his keepers, I want to give my children my last words, the last words that I want to leave them with. And this celebrated author, this wonderful thinker, this insightful and probing understander of human psychology, this great, great communicator, decides at the end of his life to leave his children, not with his own words, but with the story of the prodigal son. And with this story of the prodigal son, he leaves them. He has someone else read it from the scriptures, from the gospels. And he wants these words to be the final words from him to his kids, not his own words, but words that he has received, words that have been meaningful to him. And he wants them to hear these words as his final witness to them, to humble themselves ultimately to the great love and grace of God. So you have two very different endings for Nietzsche and Dostoevsky, and they came from this ability on Dostoevsky's part to recognize that his gifts were not him, that he was a steward of those gifts, and that if other people then didn't view him as being as great as his gifts were, that that was fine, that he did not have to reject or resent that, but rather he could overcome that resentment, live in humility, steward his gifts, and let the outcomes be God's, since the gifts were God's. Whereas Nietzsche, he was not willing to do that. He grasped at the gift as if it were his own and attempted to attach it to himself as if that made him godlike because he had these great gifts. And in doing so, he actually lost both the gift and himself. And that is the end, truly, ultimately, of narcissism, resentment at the very best, bitterness at the very best, but oftentimes total loss even of the gift that you want to be your own. There's a interesting analogy that I use to talk about this. I didn't really know about this until I started working. I did a manual job recently where I went and had to wire up some servers. And so I had to work with some wiring and some commercial buildings, and that can be really dangerous. And so you have to learn a little bit about the way that electricity works. One of the things that I was taught during that time by this practical, wise old dude who had been doing it for a long time, and he said, power always has to return to its source. This is a major principle of working safely with electricity, that a circuit gets shorted when some part of the circuit basically is broken so that the power cannot return to its source. wherever it comes from, it has to return. And if it doesn't return, wherever it gets stopped up, it ends up creating a short and, you know, a spark or explosion or something else can happen. Something really dangerous can happen. And if you become the end point, obviously, of that power trying to return to its source, then it will go through you trying to get back to its source or its ground. And that, you know, means you're going to get hurt or die. And this was interesting to me because it seemed like a material metaphor of a spiritual reality that's going on, that power from God that comes to us in any particular arena or any particular area must ultimately return to God. From him, through him, and to him are all things. To him be the glory forever. And that idea there indicates that if God grants to us for a period of time as a stewardship these great gifts, then if we try to hold on to those and grasp at those ourselves as if they are us, as if they are ours to do with as we please, and as if we deserve to be treated greatly because of the greatness of the gifts God has given us, in a way, we're creating a short circuit. We're creating a short in that circuit that as that glory and as that power is attempting to return back to its source through our service and our humility, we stop it up in ourselves, and thereby we not only destroy the gift, the usefulness of that power, but we also destroy ourselves in that process. We do damage to ourselves in that process. So with any person who has been actually given a great gift, what I would say is you have to consider that the gift is not your own, and that the use of the gift is not on your own terms, and that the outcomes of that gift are not yours to determine. Ultimately, you must be a good steward of that gift, to use it for the service of others, to the glory of God, to the best of your ability, recognizing that on your own terms, truly, you are not anything. And you must allow then the glory of the power and the outcome of that great gift to return to God, to whom it truly belongs. And in the end, that's what it means to be a great servant. Hey, Renew the Arts podcast listeners. I figured what better interruption of myself during an episode on narcissism than to put in a little plug for myself. I asked Katie and she gave me the green light. So if you've been listening to me talking by myself and you're thinking, where can I go to hear more of that? I started my own personal podcast called The Nothing Human Podcast. I have a few episodes out already in my current series on the three powers of the human spirit. So go and check it out. I'll put a link in the show notes. And if you like hearing me talk and drone about things, you'll probably like that show too. So go check it out. Thank you. And let's get back to me talking some more. So going back to our original question of, is it possible that this person who considers himself superior or considers himself to have a superior gift doesn't actually have that superior gift, but is really longing for that superiority? Well, then the humility necessary to use the gift well will also be an antidote against any kind of delusion of grandeur you might have. Because if you truly do submit yourself and you truly do attempt to serve other people and you find, I can't actually serve other people very well. Why? Maybe it's because I don't have the gift that I think that I have. And one way or the other, submitting yourself to the love and service of others and submitting yourself to the glory of God is going to poke holes in all of those desires for grandiosity and grandeur. And ultimately, if you do have a great gift, it'll make it useful. And if you don't have a great gift, it will make it plain. So humility really is the central virtue that has to be pursued for a person who might struggle with narcissism. And when I say struggle with narcissism, I really mean struggling with this sense that you are alone in the world. I just want to say this for maybe those patrons of those hosts out there. You've probably experienced this sense, especially with young people, that they think they know more than they actually know, or you think that they think that they're better than they actually are. And in your mind, you might say, well, the way to deal with this is to put this person in their place. There's a couple of really major problems with that approach. The first is that in an attempt to put a gifted person in his or her place, you are not benefiting from the gift that God is attempting to give to you through them. And this is an important part of the idea of a gift. God doesn't give a gift to a person for their own purposes and for their own benefit. He gives a gift through a person. So whether this seems just or fair to you, you need to understand that any of the people in your life who are gifted, God is trying to give that gift to you through them, which means that in order to receive that gift from them, you have to submit yourself to the gift in them. You have to recognize that the gift is great, that you haven't been given it, and that in order to receive benefit from it, you're going to have to submit yourself to the stewardship of this other person. That is a very difficult thing to do if you yourself are proud and resentful. So this narcissism that can be there in people who have a great gift is also exposing itself in many ways in their communities, which because of jealousy or envy or resentment or bitterness are treating this person negatively because they too have confused the gift with the person. And you can see this dynamic of the rejection of the community occurring with various different prodigies in history. There's one story that really stands out to me of a rejected genius, a rejected child prodigy. It's a great book. I learned about this from a great book by Amy Wallace called The Prodigy, which is a really wonderful biography of William James Sidis. And she gives some advice to the parents of gifted children in this book that I thought was pretty interesting. So I'll quote from it. And she says, "The other factor that damaged William, perhaps the most important one of all, was his parents' inability to shield him from the merciless envy of the public and its vicious desire to resent and cripple greatness and reduce it to normalcy and mediocrity. While it is not easy to explain to a child, however brilliant he may be, that he will be hated for the very reason that he is brilliant, the job must be done, and it must be done well. The child must be taught in no uncertain terms that his own standards, carefully reasoned out, are the only standards he must live by, and that he must courageously disregard all public standards." Now, you can disagree with her conclusion, as I do. You can also disagree with it, and I think that you should. However, you can understand how a person in William James Sidis's shoes, who was ruined by public scrutiny and public rejection, and who spent a lot of his life in uselessness because of that rejection and that envy and the malice. And you just read the book. It's a really awful, tragic story. But if the only solution is to follow in the footsteps that Amy Wallace recommends, then you end up in a kind of Atlas Shrugged kind of situation. You know, Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, where all the geniuses of the world reject all the mediocrity of the masses and make a community of their own, and like Atlas of old, instead of holding up and burying up the mediocrity of the world, they just shrug it off and let it suffer its own fate and its own destruction, and they go off to make a community of their own, where as equals and as peers, they respect one another and enjoy their world of geniuses. And that's a utopian vision that Ayn Rand, herself a gifted person and a narcissist, has, and it probably wouldn't work. That utopian vision would probably break down. There would be new relative differences that were detected between the various geniuses. And if they had children, some of their children might be, you know, a little too average to be treated as equals in that genius society and things like this. There's all sorts of reasons why a society like that wouldn't function. And the true solution is the solution I was talking about, which is to pursue humility. But that humility goes both ways. And one of the reasons I even brought this up is that the pride of communities is oftentimes just as much a problem as the narcissism of gifted people. That narcissism, that pride, that feeling of superiority and the desire to exercise control and be affirmed for what you are, etc., it's kind of in all of our hearts. And when we're faced with a person who is given great gifts, like a Nietzsche or a Dostoevsky or a William James Sidis, it's very hard for us to respond to that greatness without some form of sometimes even unwitting retribution. We feel we have to put them down a peg and put them on equal terms with ourselves. And even if that is motivated by some sense of desire to teach them humility, sometimes we're not the people to do that. And we really do need to teach them humility by exemplifying humility in submitting ourselves to the greatness of their gift and trying to help them to exercise service in that gift by being great recipients of that service. So if you recognize a gift that has been given to another person has been given through them to you, then you will submit yourself to some extent to the service of that gift in that particular area. And notice how that also can really help this quote-unquote narcissistic person, this gifted person, to develop empathy and to feel affirmed so that he's not grasping for something, so that he does not become so desirous of the admiration and of the feeling that he feels cut off from, that he begins pursuing these things as an end in themselves and thus destroys himself and destroys his gift. So I think that there's a responsibility when it comes to narcissism on the part of both the audience and on the part of the artist or the gifted person that both have to be pursuing humility in order to preserve that gift's value or the value of that gift in that particular community. But I want to point this out because I think there's a lot of lack of empathy, actually, on the part of a community for what a gifted person actually struggles with in their desire to serve the community with that gift, that if they are resented and they are rejected because of feelings of resentment or because people around them are constantly saying, oh, you think you're so much better or you think you're so superior because you have this gift or whatever, it actually does breed that same kind of pride in them, and by turning them into a stranger and an outcast can oftentimes make the narcissism in it that was in its seed form become full-blown narcissism in that person. And obviously, there are gifted people in the world. I think that it's important we recognize those gifts can be in all sorts of different areas. But in an area where your gift is not received very naturally, and this is oftentimes in the area of the artist. So if you're thinking, wow, it really seems like a lot of artists display these qualities of narcissism, maybe it's because in most communities, the gift of the artist is not very well received. It's not very well valued. And, you know, because if you have a gifted engineer or a gifted inventor or a gifted politician or things like this, it's likely, more likely anyway, that that person is going to be able to integrate themselves into the service of the community. You know, you have a banker or a doctor or something like this. Everyone says, oh yeah, we love that you're gifted in these areas because they benefit us so much. But if you have a prophet, or if you have an artist who comes in and says, here's how I'm seeing the world and here's what I'm feeling about it, and actually it exposes some ugliness in that community or some injustice in that community, well, nobody really wants to hear that. Nobody wants to receive that. And so you end up saying, well, you just think you're so much better than everybody else, but you're not really. And that then pushes them out. And then when they are pushed out and by themselves, they feel an even greater sense of alienation and a greater desire and longing for admiration and confirmation and affirmation of who they really are. And of course, they can't lose this sense that what I've been given actually is great. What I've been given to see actually is true. What I've been given to feel is true. So it's very difficult for that person in that state actually to overcome narcissism. And it sort of becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where by being called a narcissist, by being called arrogant, by being rejected, and by being an outcast, that person actually has a greater temptation towards those processes. So I do think a community has a major responsibility, especially to its bigger than their britches young people who might actually be gifted, that that community learn how to humble itself to the gifts, wherever they may be, in those individuals in that community, so that the community can benefit from those gifts, but also so that person can be integrated into the community more effectively and potentially help that person and encourage that person away from narcissism, away from those feelings of grandeur, superiority, need for admiration. I don't have to follow the rules. I don't feel what other people feel, and that doesn't matter, right? You see, I hope, how these things can be self-fulfilling prophecies. one way or the other, virtuous or vicious cycles. So I hope that's been helpful. I do recommend you go and listen to the Martyr Made podcast on Nietzsche and Dostoevsky. And if you're a narcissist, or you think that you're very gifted and you think you're superior to the people around you in some particular area, I beg you, pursue humility, serve the people around you, do everything you can to try to use that gift for their benefit rather than for your own benefit and for your own uplifting, and allow the glory of God that he has granted to you in this gift to return to him. Do not try to grasp at it yourself. And if that means you have to be an outcast in your particular community, then so be it. Go and be with Jesus. He himself also was an outcast. He himself also was outside the camp. And go and bear his shame willingly and see how that ultimately will be your glory. And if you as a community have gifted people around you, and maybe they're a little bit arrogant or a little bit self-centered, or they think they're better than everybody else, do the unintuitive thing of showing them admiration and showing them great feeling and understanding where they're coming from, and submit yourselves to their gifts in the areas of their gifting, and see if that doesn't deal with this temptation towards narcissism far better than putting them in their place or trying to push them down a peg or two. I think that if we did this, if we as a community and as individuals pursued humility toward one another, recognized our responsibilities of stewardship for the gifts that God has given us, and did everything we could to value the gifts in our community to the best of our ability, I think there would be so much more harmony and so much more fruitfulness. And I know that there would be a lot of artists who would have a place in a community that currently do not have one. So that's my hope. That's my prayer. And I hope that it is your hope as well. Thank you for listening and for being such faithful supporters. Please do give me your mailbag questions. It doesn't really matter what they're on. It could be on something we've talked about over the course of this last year, or it could be something else entirely that you've been mulling over. But please do send me your mailbag questions so that we have a good set of questions to talk through for the next episode. I'm really looking forward to it. I know you guys aren't going to let me down. To finish this episode, I chose the song I Cannot Forget, a track from Warbler's album Wrestling. The song is an inner dialogue between the new man and the old man, the human spirit in submission to God and the fleshly spirit of selfishness. I thought it was appropriate for this episode on the artist and narcissism, and I hope you enjoy it. You are not me.
My feet are